Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
This is the Hip Hop Saved My Life podcast. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Now sit back, because it's time for the podcast.
Hello. Welcome to Hip Hop Saved My Life. This is me, Ramesh. I'm here with Ben Green. Hello, Ben.
Hello, how's it going?
Good, thank you. This isn't actually the podcast. This is the intro bit. And Ben's not on the podcast itself. But he happens to be here with me while I'm doing the intro, so I said he could come and do the intro. How are you, Ben?
You're all right. Again, it's sort of... You've done two, haven't you, without...
Well...
You've met two people without me. Three.
Well, I've not actually met our guest on this podcast, Last Skeptic, Corin Dueb, I think I pronounced that correctly. I didn't meet him, we did it remotely. So, yeah. And you get to be on with a guest, not with a guest, but you're on the same podcast as with a guest.
But I don't get to meet the guest.
No. Cool, so as I was saying, in today's podcast we talk to the Last Skeptic, an amazing, I say hip-hop producer. His latest album sort of branches out outside of hip-hop, but it's great. Super talented, and it's good for us to actually get a producer on and chat, and it's good chatter. So I think you'll enjoy it.
I wouldn't know.
No, you wouldn't know. But you'll listen to it, and you will know. You haven't listened to it at this moment, have you?
No.
Also, for some reason, well, into this podcast, you discover what happens when... You sort of do a bit of online research into your guest and it backfires, because I described him as Hackney's finest and he's actually from North London. He's a massive gooner. So yeah, and we kept that in the edit because I like to keep it real. Do you know what I mean? Hip hop and all that. Okay, so enjoy the podcast.
I am honoured to be joined by Hackney's finest. You're Hackney, right? Have I just made that up?
You know what? Like, there's a lot of like false information online that says I'm from Hackney, but I was born and raised in Finsbury Park. Like, I was born in the Whittington, so I've got to like big up Finsbury every time.
Okay, so I've already fucked up this early doors in the thing.
It's over. So. This is it. I quit. I'm out of
here. I am joined by the Last Skeptic. Hello, mate. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Thank you so much for having me, man. It's a great honor.
No, it's an honor for us, man. I was just saying before we started recording that you are the first hip-hop producer that we've had on, and
potentially like, the geekiest. I mean, who knows, because producers are definitely the geekiest of all hip-hop.
Well, there is a rumor about you guys that you've got like social issues and shit like that. Is that a stereotype you have to deal with?
That is not only a stereotype, a reality that I have to deal with. So I'm both offended by it and have to uphold it at all times.
A little bit that you like to pull. How did you get into hip hop?
Let's talk about you, man. So you are, well, first of all, you're one of the most prolific people around. Like, you're putting out stuff left, right, and center. But how did you get into hip hop and like sort of the production side of things? What sort of how did you come to be who you are now?
Well, I initially first started getting into hip hop when I was around like 9 or 10, and my brother would swear that he introduced me to hip hop. Big up Tiernan, and he's a comedian as well. Tiernan,
yeah, he's very funny. Check him out. Well, we're getting him on actually. I think he's going to be on the next one. So
he's equally
we're doing a brother one too.
Brilliant. He was always into like Far Side and Hieroglyphics and West Coast hip hop and kind of the more, I guess, conscious and side of West Coast hip hop. But when I got to school, I kind of built on that a little bit. And obviously, you never want to be like your older siblings. You don't, you know, it's just not cool. You kind of want to be your own person. So when I got to school and I started joining a crew, like a rap crew, and then I started getting into like Tupac. So Tupac for me, like age 10 onwards, was the biggest influence for me. And from that, it always, even though I was rapping as a kid, it was always the beats that really sparked a huge interest in me, and it always somehow encapsulated and inspired me more than lyrics. Like I always found it, and still do to this day, like really difficult to remember lyrics, but I can remember, you know, snare dropouts, or, you know, little, you know, inflections of like a string sample here or whatever it was. And listening to West Coast rap at that early age just inspired me so heavily to want to make music, and beats by DJ Quick and Daz and Dre and all of these producers that I looked up to so much. It took me a couple of years to kind of get the balls to actually make a beat, and it was Sway who actually taught me. He was a couple of years older than me in school, and I was rapping with him, or attempting to rap, because even back then he was the sickest lyricist and the sickest like punchline rapper that I've ever met to this day. And and he just, you know, sat me down and was like, here's Cubase, this is what you do. And I was fucking awful. I was like the shittest producer. Like the beats I was making were so shit, and you know, bless him, he didn't hesitate to tell me how shit they were. And and I just carried on listening to everything and absorbing, you know, mostly. I mean, these were the times where you had to pick a side, East Coast or West Coast. You had to do it. And I was a stalwart for West Coast. Like, that was it. I would not.
And what was it about West Coast? Because obviously that is, like, you know, you don't need me to tell you, you know better than I do, that how different those two sounds were. And why was it that the West Coast sound sort of attracted you more?
I think it was partly to do with when you're an angsty teenager, much like I think Nirvana applied to some people or Oasis applied to some people. For me, like the mentality of Tupac, this is funny because I had a dream like 3 days ago that I was doing this very podcast, and that I went into a long 10-minute monologue about how similar my life was to Tupac's, and you were there on the other side of this going, yeah, I feel you, man. It's just so uncanny. Like that was my entire dream.
Right, Listen, let's make that dream a reality now, man. Let's go.
That's it. Well, no, but like, I there was something about, like, I went through a lot of issues at school, and like a lot of, had got into trouble and stuff like that. And I always had this mentality of feeling like it was me against the world. And being in, you know, Finsbury Park, obviously it wasn't the nicest of areas growing up. There was a lot of problems around, but I'm not saying it's anything like, you know, the equivalent of Compton or, you know, wherever, or Baltimore, you know, the equivalent of where Tupac grew up. And but there was that mentality that still went through, and it really spoke to me. It spoke to me that I was like, fuck, I feel like I've got my back against the wall, and like, fuck everybody, and I can't trust anybody. And, you know, you do that when you're a kid, you know, especially like 13, 14.
Do you know what, man? I can totally see you were just like him. You're right, man. I've got it.
Is it the Thug Life tattoo that I've got?
I think, yeah. An abdominal tattoo to me, that's a lot of confidence there, because like when he got it, obviously he was ripped, but you're having faith that you're going to stay like that. I mean, obviously he passed away, but like in your 50s, that is a... That's a tough one to pull off, right? But
yeah, the T and the H are going to space apart. Like it's,
yeah,
might lose the E around the back.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's how aging works, right?
That's going to start to move round the sides, and then all of a sudden you've got a hug lift tattoo, Jeremy,
it's not too bad.
No,
it could be worse.
It's not great. So you were into West Coast. So you started doing. Would you say then all your beats were they the sort of thing that you might hear on a West Coast record then? Were you like that heavily influenced that your stuff was super West Coast sounding?
Yeah, I think I was trying to emulate a bit of the West Coast sound in terms of like the traditional West Coast sound with the high pitched synths and stuff like that. But I was equally trying to kind of take the ideas from DJ Quick, where he would go super musical with it. And someone like Battle Cat, who, you know, equally did like the laid back LA swing, but then was super musical. And you could hear chord progressions and you could hear stuff getting quite emotional. And it was from that the beginnings of that I really still, you know, I still take to this day, where I want to take a beat, make it sound super hard, make a nasty bass line, and then all of a sudden like take it somewhere else with chords that really try and evoke emotion from people.
And so then were you working with rappers then? So when you like, so how old were you then when this sort of happened?
I guess between the age of like 11 and 16, you know, was a real like formulation period for me,
right?
For listening, studying, yeah.
And then were you getting sway to like to do verses for your beats then at that stage?
Oh no, I was too bad for that. I was too shit. Like, and this is the point where Sway was like absolutely killing it with battle scars, and he would go and be doing all these battles and stuff. And at the time I wasn't even in school because I had to leave school. And so like he would just come round and like just chat to me and just be like, oh yeah, I did this battle last night. And here's the bar that I said. And I was like, oh man, that's so sick. And I'd still be at home on my own just trying to make beats that would be as good as his level. And then I saved up and got a secondhand MPC and MPC 2000 XL for all the nerds listening that want to know, and a drum machine. And I was like, I'd have no idea how to use this. And he had to come round and kind of show me how to chop up a sample. And I think when I started chopping up samples, because previous to that, I was kind of playing in stuff on a keyboard. And when I started chopping up samples, I really found my swing and I understood how to do it. And by that point, I was into Gangsta and I was into DJ Premier and Pete Rock. And then that additionally kind of switched up the sound in a different way.
So what sort of stuff? So you listen to Gangsta, and is Premier one of your favorites then?
Yeah. Like the Moment of Truth album is one of my favorite albums of all time. When Premier, you know, cause in the early Gangsta albums and early Primo production he was fucking amazing, but he hadn't established his chopped up like Primo sound that he is now known for. And it, for me, Moment of Truth was the album where he fully, you know, he got that sound, he understood it, and he did it, and he smashed it. And he had tunes like Work, you know, and Discipline's not on that, is it? No, he had like a bunch of different records on there where it was just Above the Clouds with Inspector Deck, which is just
yes,
blew my mind.
Myself, Lord and Master, shall bring disaster to evil factors. Demonic chapters shall be captured by kings through the storms of days after, and to the earth from the sun through triple darkness to plaster, with a force that can't be compared to any firepower, for its mind power shared, the brainwave causes vessels to circulate like constellations reflect at night off the lake.
The thing that interests me about you going into production is that the truth is most people, because like I was shit, but I had a go at rapping when I was young, because like, you know, you love it so much, and when you love something so much you want to have a go at it, right? And but the thing is that rapping is the way that most people go, I think, because you don't need any equipment, right? You just sort of start doing it. Yeah. So for you, what you're talking about is you got into production because you like the beats and stuff, and then you start doing it, and then you were shit at it, as everybody is when they start doing something. Yeah. And then was there a point at which you thought, oh, fuck this, man, like, I'm having to like get familiar with the equipment, I'm having to figure this out, I'm just going to start rapping? Like, did you get frustrated with it, or were you so determined that that was the way that you were going to go? Because also the other thing is, it's not obvious how you're going to immediately get any kind of recognition for that. Do you know what I mean? Because it's harder to put yourself out there as a producer than it is to put yourself out as a rapper. Because like you're saying, like Sway was going to battles, and like straight away you could go and turn up and spit a verse that you wrote that day, you can freestyle or whatever, and you're not in that position. So was that a difficult kind of thing for you?
Yeah, I mean, I started out rapping, and I didn't mention before, but I kind of was rapping a little bit at the same time, and I was still writing lyrics, and that was, you know, the first records I ever got played on pirate radio were me rapping and over my own beats, and right. It was only until the age of when I got to like 16, 17 that I was like, fuck it, I don't have the confidence to do this on stage. And B, my memory is so shit for remembering lyrics. I just can't do it. So I still to this day, like, you know, occasionally write lyrics. There's every couple of albums that I do or records I do with people that, you know, I spit a verse on things just because I feel like I I still love it. I still want to do it, but my attention span is just not, it's not strong enough to do both, to do both things. So I still, like, you know, I get on the mic at every gig that I do and hype things up and I rap along to lyrics and do whatever, but I just don't think I could be a rapper. Like, all of the MCs I work with, I look at him in awe for remembering all those bars, man. How the fuck, even you with comedy, how do you remember all of that? Like, I don't get it. Like, it's crazy.
Well, I totally understand with rapping, like, particularly because, like, a lot of these, particularly now, because, like, years ago people put out an album and then they tour that album, but now people are putting out mixtapes and then they put out freestyles left, right and center. And then I went to a Lupe Fiasco gig out here recently, right? And the thing is, it's like my ability, I remember I used to memorize records. Like, I used to be like, I'd used to be able to rap, but now there's so much stuff coming out and you listen to so much stuff, I can't remember it. And then when we stood in the Lupe Fiasco gig, we're right near the front, and he started, like, doing this thing where he'd hand the mic to people, or he'd, like, rap alongside people and they'd be rapping back to him. And I just spent most of the gig shitting myself that he would do that to me. Because there's no fucking way, mate. Look, I'm a Lupe fan, but I can't remember that shit. Like, there's no fucking way. Just nervous. That's a horrible feeling, to be in a gig nervous that you're just going to get mugged off.
That's why I never stand at the front of anything. This is what I've learned through years of a brother doing comedy and mates doing comedy, is you never sit at the front, and at a gig, you never stand at the front. You're just always at the back, chilling. It's way easier. It's way less stress.
So you started doing your own stuff, and then, basically now we know you for, like, putting out your own stuff and working with different lyricists and stuff like that.
Yeah.
How did that sort of all start to come about? Did you just meet up with people, or did you get in touch with people? Or how do you decide who you're going to get to do vocals over your stuff now?
It's all about, for me, it's just people that I've met and linked with and got a good vibe with. And as cheesy as it sounds, you know, I'm the biggest, like, cheerleader for and encourager for when it comes to music of only working with the people that you get a good energy from, like, without a doubt. Like, my first joint album, my first, essentially first album, but it was a joint record, was with a rapper called Verb T from the 4 Owls.
Had him on. I'm fast up between a rock and a sparse place, where my mind's laughing, asking how the glass tastes, and my heart's straight. Cut down the middle because it knows it's a little past save, and I think on past days as my head just cackles and my chest groans. I walk alone in torn sandals as I think about what it could become. Then my dream bubbles burst of razors and forked tongues. Like,
did an album in 2007, we started in like 2005, where it was just me and him, and it was it was great because I'd met him before, he liked my beats, and it, you know, as a, I think I started that record when I was like 19 or something, and that was a really good confidence boost for me, because as someone that I got on with that well, you know, music's always been a huge therapy to me, and it's been a quite an emotional thing and such an important part of my life, you know, that you have to get a rapper that understands that and that understands that it's a sensitive thing, you know what I mean? It's an emotional thing, and they have to really be in tune with that, you know, and be in tune in part of the process with that. And I was lucky enough to work with Verbs, who really understood that, and he's quite an emotional guy as well, so he really got with that. And I'm not just talking about emotion as in sadness, I mean, like, aggression or, you know, happiness, whatever it is, like the extremes of it, you know.
Go on, sorry.
I was just gonna say, and even to this day, I'm still the same. I will only work with people that are on a level that we chat, that, you know, we chat and hang out, and we can hang out beyond the rap shit.
I guess, like, because most people think, well, I think you can tell the difference in between records, because, like, sometimes you can tell that a producer and a rapper have worked together and, like, decided to come up with an actual song. Do you know what I mean? Like, an actual thing where they've gone, like, okay, this is the concept for it, let's do it and put it together. Whereas, like, you know that a lot of stuff, I'd argue most stuff is where a rapper's just picked a beat and then just gone, okay, I like this, I'm just going to spit over the top of it. But there is there's a big difference, right? And I think you can tell the difference qualitatively. Like, hip-hop is often accused of not, of just being a bit disposable in the way that it puts stuff out. And that's certainly not true for your stuff, like particularly your latest album is very much like, you've obviously thought a lot about it. You've not just gone, oh, this is a great beat and I'm going to put it. You've come up with ideas. So is that the way you've always worked?
Yeah, always. Like I've thought sometimes way too much about it. You know, that's why it took me so long to put out my debut solo record, which was called Thanks for Trying, which came out on BBE in like 2013. It took me so long. And it actually took Jest, of all people, to tell me, stop fucking being a dickhead, just like get your shit together and put this record out. And like, I was like, oh fuck, I better do it now, because putting out a record yourself, especially as a producer, takes a lot of balls and a lot of like, it takes a lot of like you to be brave enough to go, these are not just beats, these are songs. And yeah, that first album of mine was mostly instrumental, and I really had to find a way to make those songs not just loops. And I've never made just loops anyway, but you have to make them interesting for 3 or 4 minutes and make there be some kind of journey. And with this album, which I think of mine as my second solo proper album, yeah, there's no samples on it, it's all live musicians. And I just wanted to take my time and make something that was completely interesting from the first bar of the song until the last, you know?
With your first album, like, you know, you said it's like most instrumentals. Mm. That I guess that's braver, isn't it, than like just getting a load of artists on to like do stuff over the top of it or whatever. Like, was that a conscious decision, or did you just think, oh, I like these as they are, I want to put them out like this?
A bit of both, but I think even when I made the beats, I knew that they weren't going to be, not all of them were going to be as ready as they were until I got the live musicians on them. And so that first record, I enlisted like cellists and violinists and you know, Biscuit, who plays the flute, who fucking kills it on everything I get him on. And but yeah, it was totally quite a scary thing. But I think I got to the point in my career at that point where I was so pissed off and quite like disheartened by the industry and disheartened by music in general.
And why is that? How come you got to that point?
I think for anyone that like suffers from anxiety like I do, or suffers from, or that's in this industry or is creative, you always doubt yourself, and then you compare yourself to other people, and then you do this whole same cycle where you go, actually, fuck it, fuck everyone else, I'm doing what I want anyway. And then you go, oh wait, but what's everyone else doing? Oh, fuck them anyway. And you just go through this entire back and forth. And and in doing so, I you know, you can tell by the names, the things that I name my albums, you know, especially before my new album, Thanks for Trying, the name of it, which I since then went on to name my label and name my podcast, Thanks for Trying. You know, it came from this whole thing where I felt like at that time I was I had the ears of people, I had the connections to people, but I, even working here or there with majors, which at the time was a lot, you know, everyone wanted to be on a major, had a lot of people kind of going, oh yeah, this is cool, but you know, it's not for us, but thanks for trying anyway, you know. And I felt like that was the attitude, and so it was a big kind of like fuck you to everyone else, like I don't really care, you know. And since then I put out an EP called I Don't Even Like You. I put out an EP called,
yes, that is the title that I can most relate to, by the way. it's a great title,
very very relatable. I put out Revenge Is the Best Success, How Not to Make a Living. I just really wanted to be quite sardonic with these yes, album titles, you know.
Your Beat Tape Sucks is another one of my favorites.
Your Beat Tape Sucks. I almost put out a record called Only Here for the Catering, and that and that is just the honest truth of how I feel about most things. And then with this album is it's called This Is Where It Gets Good, because I wanted to really say that, you know, through all the ups and downs that all of us go through on a daily basis, you know, and all of the ups and downs that I've been through, you know, I wanted to look ahead and kind of think, you know what, actually things will get good from now on. It's a mind state.
So tell me about this latest album. So this new album is sort of like this is where it gets good. It's like sort of your, you've sort of said, and again, I might have got some false information like this Hackney bullshit, whoever that fucking cunt is.
Who was
but
that?
Anyway,
I don't know, mate.
But anyway, you sort of said this is your most personal album, and it's sort of, you sort of feel like you're dealing with mental health issues in this album. So sort of explain that whole thing to me.
Yeah, I've throughout my life, I've kind of always dealt with the anxiety and kind of the ups and downs of, like mental wellness in some form or another. And also the extremes of being mad emotional, whether it be, like I was saying earlier, of being super aggressive and then super sad and all of this stuff. And this album was really cathartic because for a number of reasons, you know, I made a record that wasn't rap. You know, for me, I wanted to make this record, whatever it was going to become as I was making. And as it turned out, it turned out being more of a electronic album, like a cinematic orchestra kind of record. And for that, I really felt like I had a huge amount of freedom being it on my own label, where I could just essentially do whatever the hell I wanted to. And every song is meant to be there. Every collaboration was happened because that person was sat in my house with me, and you know they were going through some shit, and we connected. And you know, there's a song, the one of the only the two rap songs on there is features Trim.
Who's fucking amazing, by the way. I mean, it's such a great track, man.
He's the boss. You know, former member of Roll Deep, Grime MC, you know, one of the grime pioneers. And you know, and we both were talking a lot about, you know, the Tupac mentality. You know, I don't need any friends, you know, fuck everybody, I can do this shit on my own. And and that song came out of that, and it's called I Don't Need Any Friends. You know,
yeah, it ain't my loss, we don't beg friend, no, ain't my job, nope, and it ain't my problem if they don't like me, it ain't my problem. See, I'm wasting time, but it ain't my guap. You might get peeled, car, it ain't my box. Nah, it ain't my shop. Nowadays, if you get shanked in the hood, it ain't my lot.
When I did the song Trouble with Takura, incredible singer, and with Koji Radical, who of course is doing, you know, incredibly well now. You know, they're two people that are always around my house and you know, listening to beats and just chatting, you know. And They totally got the vibe of the record. They understood where I was coming from with it and captured it perfectly. And I feel like that's the same with all of the singers on there. And it was just the way it came out. It just came out like a diary, you know, without, you know, again sounding too cheesy. But it's an entire journey from the beginning. You know, it starts off with a song called Death, which sounds incredibly morbid, but it's just about the end of a relationship, you know, not just a relationship to a person, but a relationship to like myself, you know, thinking I am a certain way, but wanting to in fact change and become better and, you know, better equipped to deal with the things that life throws you. And it ends with a song called Don't Forget, which essentially is just going, listen, mate, despite all of the journeys and all the happiness and the sadness, just don't forget any of it. Move on, manage stuff and be better, but just don't forget all of this shit happened, you know?
This is a thing that, like, because like, you've sort of answered this question, but I'm interested to know. Obviously, you sound like somebody that thinks a lot about what you put into it. Friction, when we're chatting to Friction, he was saying to me sometimes, like, he's had things where he's been putting things together and then the vocalist has turned up and they haven't really been into it, or it hasn't kind of been what he's looking for or whatever. Has that happened to you? I mean, probably doesn't happen recently, because it sounds like you've put this stuff together with people that you know and you've come up with the songs together. But is it difficult? You've worked your ass off to put a track together and then you get someone in to come over and interpret that lyrically or whatever. Have you had situations where you just like, fuck, this isn't what I was looking for, or they're not on the same vibe that I am on this track or whatever?
Yeah, you just have to like record it and delete it after and not tell them. That is it. You know what, like that has happened sometimes. I've done that. You don't want to hurt anyone's feelings, you know what I mean?
Ah! A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Look, first of all, can I just say, I haven't said this. This is where it gets good. It's so fucking great. And if you haven't heard it, you need to get it, man. Thank you. Like when you put the album together, are you thinking, I hope this track lands, or I hope this is the one that I think is going to lead this album out? Do you know what I mean? Like, or are you just thinking, I want to make a cohesive album and let everything else take care of itself?
Some of the time I am, like when I made a single called Damn featuring a grime MC called Jammin like last year, and it was just a straight up grime single, and I thought, you know what, I hope this lands. Like, I feel like this is a grime song, like, and it did pretty good on the radio, and it, you know, it did all right. Spotify got picked up in places, and I'm really glad that I did that song, and also because I could play it in DJ sets, which is sick. But with this album, I didn't even have that in mind. I fully just thought, fuck everybody, I just want to make a great record, and a great record that I can be so proud of no matter what happens. And it did surprise me in places, because you know, Trouble obviously was the single with Koji Radical, and people did really love that song. But then there was a song called Keep It Simple that again and again, that song's really, really close to my heart, and it features a singer called Matt Wills, who's now signed to Virgin. But when I first met him and started working with him, he was super young. He messaged me on Twitter going, you know, hey man, I love your beats, can we do a song? And so made a few records together, and they were all just super honest, and like, and Keep It Simple from the album is essentially like a Jay Dilla style beat, but with this singer on it that all I wanted to do was make a record like a John B record with, or like Usher's first album, like all the R&B that I used to love. And that song, Keep It Simple, just again and again, people just kept coming to me and going, that is beautiful. That is my song. And so it was a pleasant surprise when that became the one that like got put on a Spotify playlist here, or like people just kept coming to me and telling me they loved it. And that's the real beauty of releasing music, man. You know, when you get feedback like that.
I mean, you just mentioned Spotify. You've got loads of stuff on Spotify. Is Spotify good for artists? I mean, that's the thing that people think, like, you know, obviously the music industry went through a phase of where people just listened to shit for nothing, right? And now we've got like Spotify and Tidal or whatever people are using. Is Spotify been good for you?
I think if you own your own catalog, yes, definitely.
Right.
Then, you know, it's, the numbers are ridiculous. Like, you can Google them. The what you get paid per Spotify play isn't very much. But then if you compare it to how much you get paid for radio play, and then think, well, you know, if I get a play on Radio 1 on prime time, then X amount of million people are going to hear that. But I'll still only get like 40 quid. So isn't that the same as Spotify? Like, if you get a million plays on Spotify, it's something like $4,000. So. Right. I don't know, like it's not like a huge difference. I think personally Spotify is a great thing for artists.
I mean, from a consumer's point of view, which is like, you know, I think what's amazing about it is like you just said, you can discover new artists. And if I say to somebody, oh, you should check out this guy, they can immediately look it up and find the whole back catalogue and just get into it straight away. Yeah. And also the other thing, because like when you listen to an artist, it comes up with like suggested artists that are in that kind of area. And the algorithms on it, or however they decide to do it, is actually pretty good. Because like when you listen to someone...
How do they know?
I've got no idea. But like, you know, sometimes, like for example, on Netflix, I don't think they've got a fucking clue on that, how to suggest other shit, right? Because like, it will go, you watch BoJack Horseman, and then it will go...
if you like this, you'll also like Black Beauty because it also features a horse. Like, there doesn't seem to be like a real fucking genuine understanding of what the connections are, right? But on like Spotify, you like listen to it, and the artist they suggest, it always seems to work for me. It's great, man. I've got to talk to you about this track that that I fucking love. It is Drum Roll Please. That tune, mate.
Thank you.
Fucking hell. It is mad. Oh my God. I love it, man. I properly love it. The video is wicked as well. But like, how did that come about? I mean, that is just, I love it. I mean, if you haven't heard it, you've got to listen to it immediately. Like, pause it. In fact, we'll drop it in now.
You know the flow's mad, so don't never chat on Pinocchio quotes. I'm a killer, Mr. Wickedest body, and every lyrics is flipping and hitting a whoop. You know about that melody, Michelangelo putting the graphic images. I really couldn't give a fuck about the traffic in this. I'm killing you, rappers sound ridiculous. It's funny how you couldn't see me coming, but I'm running niggas into this. Going through pain, going through.
How did that come about? It's so fucking great.
Thank you. Yeah, that is pure aggression, and like me and my angriest. Like I heard like this drum roll on a record that I loved. Like it wasn't even a part of the song. It's just a bit where the drummer's just going nuts, and I chopped it into like little pieces and kind of like replayed it as a sample, and then and it just made me so angry that I was like, this is it, I'm just in my zone, I'm just getting mad right now. And I actually made it on a plane of all places, and I think probably just to avoid being like shitting myself over turbulence or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was getting super angry. It was great. And then a couple of years later, like this beat was always there. I was always listening to it as an instrumental just to get myself fired up. Like, and Screwfizzer came around, and we were doing some other stuff, and I played him the beat, and he literally just wrote the bars like on the spot. And it took a couple of months just to gather the rappers that I wanted.
Yeah.
Eventually I got Michael Payne, former guest of yours and a good friend of mine, and he did this sickest verse. Just all about the thing with Justin Michael Payne, that he thinks in such a way lyrically that I just don't think any other rapper does.
Mate, like, he is fucking, I think he's a fucking genius, man. Like, yeah, I just think he should be massive. And he's big, don't get me wrong. And people, I only hear good things about him, but the guy is like next level. I really do believe that.
Proper like lyricist, you know. He came on that song, he came out and he goes, oh, I've got the beat, I heard Screwfizzer's verse, sick. I'm going to do a verse about, because it's called Drum Roll Please, I'm going to do a verse about magicians. So, right, bro, cool. So he just does this, the whole verse is just him like doing like metaphors and similes about magicians. I was like fucking blown away. And then just done a EP with Dream McLean, so he came on and dropped a verse. And then the final verse was someone else who I was working with, which is Jordan from Rizzle Kicks, aka Al the Native, who came in and did the final verse. But there were just four people that I worked with constantly, and that I just thought, fuck it, I'm gonna put it out as a single. Like, there's, you know, I'm not gonna hold this for anything. It's just two jokes. Like, this the beat makes me too like amped. I can't, like,
it is the proper track where you do that nasty nod your head and feel like you're a bad man, even though you're driving a Mariva to Tesco. You know what I mean? It's fucking amazing, dude.
Thank you.
It made me think a bit, and they're not similar at all, except for this one thing of like, I don't know if you know Agent Orange by Pharoah Munch, right? But like that track, it starts off with what is like an internet sort of download sort of sound, right? And you sort of think, this can't become a song. And it does become a song, and it's fucking amazing. And it's the same thing with Drum Roll Please, where the drums start and you go, this can't be the sample that is going to be the beat. And it fucking is, and it's amazing.
It's like, that's the biggest compliment you could ever give me, because I want people to be fucked up by these things. I want them to go, what the fuck is happening here? It's an assault on the senses.
That is what it is. You hear the beat kick in and you go, okay, it's gonna change up, but nah, that's the beat, mate, you're gonna fucking have it.
But that's it, sometimes the simplest songs and sometimes the simplest things that you do are the fucking best, and sometimes the biggest. Like, I did a tune called Show Me that I made in like 5 minutes, and I, you know, chopping up a sample, And to this day, like, I think some YouTuber used it as the intro music to something, like some skater, some 15-year-old skater. And then I was getting like comments and, you know, emails from all these random kids, like, you know, just going, that song is so, I'm like, I made that, what's going on? Like, I don't understand. Listen to my other stuff. You know,
yeah. That is so good, man. And then with that, you got four MCs. So all Dree McLeod, by the way, who you've done a lot of stuff with.
Yeah.
Do you know what I love about him, man? I mean, he just sounds like he just got up. Do you know what I mean? And it's such a nice kind of vibe. Like, he doesn't ever seem like he's trying, but it's fucking great, man.
He's one of those people that, like, every single word sounds like you're right, like he's making it up as he goes along, but that's his delivery. Every single word has been placed so meticulously, and like, there's so much thought gone into it, that he is such like a talented lyricist. And you know, he's another one that the way his brain works is just constantly inspires me, like, big time.
And did they just come in and just drop the verses, and or did you come with that shit together, or like, how did it work?
It was that tune was separate. So even though they all knew each other, there was definitely a sense of one-upmanship, which I love in rap as well, where they heard each other's verse and like, oh shit, fuck, maybe I need to do better. Like, maybe I need to, you know, like, oh shit, I want to be better because that person was so sick. It was all camaraderie and really like nice. And then they all came together when we shot the video, and then they were, you know, and you could see them like bigging each other up for the verses, and that was really nice too. And that's also a thing as a producer. I love the fact that even though some of them knew each other, they didn't all know each other properly. And through working with me, they kind of like get to know each other more. And I love that people get to collaborate as well, like with me and without me. And I think that's the beauty of rap, you know, is it definitely, cheesy alert, it brings people together, you know.
Yes. And that is something Tupac would have said and believed in, so.
In that exact accent as well.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think
it was from Finsbury Park initially.
So what stuff are you listening to at the moment?
Oh, man.
Well, what I'm interested in is, I guess, do you listen to more British or US or both, or do you even consider them different? I mean, do you just listen to what you listen to? I mean, how does it work for you?
Right now, it's definitely British. Yeah, right. Without a doubt. Like, I listen to Giggs. Giggs reminds me a lot of how I used to feel about DMX back in the day. So I used to like get so excited on 4-3-2-1 or Money, Power, Respect or whatever a song it was, when I'd be like, oh, DMX's verse is coming up last, I can't wait to hear what he's gonna do. And Giggs gives me that exact same feeling of excitement to hear his verses. Jay Huss, his album, for me, that's the album of the year for me.
It's great, man. It's such a great album, yeah.
Says disappear like second nature. Bosses on the same block like an hour later. Whole team eating, but it's only right. There's a spare plate, but you're the phony type.
He's made a record that's so well produced, but not overproduced. And that's a really fine line to tread. And he does it like perfectly. A lot of the Afrobeats artists are brilliant, so I think a lot of what I play in clubs, I end up listening to quite a lot, whether it be like Mo Stack or, you know, Hardy Caprio or like people like that. You know, it's definitely inspired me a lot. American stuff, you know, I used to listen to, be up to date on all the most recent like US stuff, but definitely the UK has taken over in my listening habits.
The UK just seems to just have so much great stuff coming out at the moment, man. Do you know what I mean? It's like, and you mentioned Giggs, I've got to say, if people aren't following Giggs on Instagram, you've got to do, he's fucking hilarious.
He's such a good dude. Like, I've met him once when I did a song with him.
You know, man, all creep, stalkers, man be taking out talkers, yeah, man be making shit awkward, yeah.
But having Giggs come round, like, because I record everything in my house, and I still always have done, and I think I always will, you know. And he just kind of came around, and the loveliest dude, and he did it like, you know, I'm not going to give away his creative process, but he is, he's a fucking G. He's a genius and a G.
It is,
I was about to say it. I was like, oh, you know, I don't want to give away like secrets, you know.
I thought we were about to get like an exclusive, like
exclusive.
He does like 45 minutes of yoga or something before he spits a bar.
But that's normal, right? That's normal.
Yeah, yeah. That, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, everyone knows that about gigs. He's a fucking big yoga guy.
Oh man, hip hop gripes.
Is there anything about hip hop you don't like?
Oh man, I think it's the same with anything that you love, man. Like there's so many annoyances. Like a lot of the misogyny, I think I still find it hard to get with, and I think that's dwindled a lot in recent years as well. That has fucked me up a lot with listening to one of my favorite records, which is the Marshall Mathers LP.
Yeah.
And when I go back to it, I'm like, I can't listen to this anymore. I didn't even realize he said all this shit about rape and fucking this horrible shit about women. I'm like, what? How did he get away with this?
Like, it's so crazy, man, because like, I mean, you know, we've talked about this a lot on this podcast about like the drawing a line between entertainment and what you think is offensive and acceptable or whatever. But I think I must have just not found anything offensive. I mean, I still, as a comedian, my tolerance for offense is pretty high. Like I sort of don't really get offended by much, but like, at the same time, I don't remember, like, you know, you gave a great example of the Marshall Mathers LP. Like, when I first listened to it, I don't remember being shocked by anything. I just listened to it, thought it was great. And then you listen to it back now and you go, fuck, I didn't react to it. Like, it's so surprising, man. Like, it's mad. It's even like, for me, comedy-wise, it's like when I went back to watch Delirious by Eddie Murphy, right? And like, I remember just thinking that was hilarious. And then for the first 10 minutes, it's some of the most homophobic stuff I've ever heard in my life. Do you know what I mean? I was like, how did I not react to this at the time? It's mad.
It kind of ruins the experience for you when you go back and you're like, fuck, I don't think I can. I mean, I still, the beats on it are like, you know, exceptional. The Dre production, vintage Dre production on the Marshall Mathers LP is insane. Like, I still make beats that I think are trying to be as good as Bitch Please, which even the title itself is. But like, even like, or Remember Me, or you know, any of, or Criminal. Fucking hell, listen to that beat. It's insane.
It's a hard one to reconcile. Do you know what I mean? Like, but yeah, a lot of classics, you sort of go back to go, fuck. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's mad. By the way, just quickly, we're sort of almost out of time here. You've been a brilliant guest, so thank you so much for coming on.
No worries, my pleasure.
Where were you on tour? You just said you just come off tour.
I did, just did a few shows in Australia, and then I came back and was touring with Doc Brown in the UK, yeah.
And how was that tour with Doc Brown?
Yeah, it was great. Like he's my best pal, so it's just so lovely to go out there and do these shows with him. And you know, he loves rap. You know, in his heart, he is rap. So for him, it's just it's like coming home doing shows where he just gets to rap and not do comedy and just get everything off his chest. So that's you know, it's always a wonderful experience DJing for him. You know, and yeah, it's just a lot of fun. You know, I always just drink far too much vodka, and that is always a great time for me whenever.
I've got to be honest with you, he fucks me off, and let me explain why. I just hate when people are really talented, like, because obviously, like, you go and do a gig with him, and he smashes a comedy gig, and then you hear that he's put out that fucking amazing album, and then goes on tour. Like, fuck him.
Yeah, like, well, yeah, it's true.
It just does my head in. I don't like other people being talented, mate. It does my head in.
It's true. I wish I could do comedy and rap too. But thing is, you know, you got bars, man. I've seen the show. You know what I mean? I've seen you freestyling. So
yeah, but do you know, like, when the way that people look at me rapping is the way that you look at like a kid doing maths. You go like, oh, he's done it. He's doing well for his age. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not a rapper. So then if I do anything, people go, well done.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got bars, isn't he? Oh, you could definitely do a track of your own. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, bless. Oh, bless. I'm surprised you haven't asked me of my all-time favorite MCs. And the reason I say this is because I was out the other night with Michael Payne and Sipa, a.k.a. MC Grindr. And yeah. I said to them, I was like, you know what? Like, I'm doing Ramesh's podcast. I'm really excited about it. And then Sipa goes to me, goes, oh, you need to be ready for. I was like, ready for what? He goes, ready with your top fives, man. And I'm not even joking. We stood there in this party, when the smoking air of this party, for 45 minutes. Me, Michael Payne, and Sipa arguing. I mean, we weren't even like discussing. We were like arguing about top fives. And it was beautiful, man. You know this as a rap fan. You know those are the most enriching conversations.
You could go on about it for ages. So did you come up with a top five?
Well, let me open my notes in my phone. So the whole time I was like...
Holy shit.
Yeah, I came up with three of the top five MCs because I thought it's so difficult, man. It changes all the time. Like,
okay.
So the three I could get were obviously Tupac, obviously. Come on, you know, he lived my life, and I took over the reins when he passed away.
Yeah.
Three Stacks, Andre 3000, of course.
Yeah.
And Black Thought.
Black Thought, mate.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a great top three, man. What I would say, Andre 3000, right? Obviously, like, people love him. Do you feel sorry for Big Boy at all? That, like,
because people like always look at Freestacks going, oh, he's a god.
Well, the thing is, it's like, you know, like how we're just talking about Doc Brown, because like Andre, like he sings, right? Obviously he does, right? And so he does all that kind of thing, and then people are heralding him as like one of the greatest MCs of all time. Like Big Boy, he's got to be a bit pissed off about that, right? Because he's not shit by any stretch of the imagination, right?
Yeah, he's sick. He's done a lot of great solo albums, and you know, even the song Shutterbug was sick. But it's tough when you're up against Andre 3000. Like, it's like having, you know, like a sibling that's just killing it. Like, you know, you kind of just want to be a baker or something. You'd kind of just have to give it all up and do something else and be amazing.
Well, I know he breeds pit bulls. So
there you go.
That might be the thing.
That's, I think, stick at it. Big Boy is amazing, man.
Yeah, he's amazing.
I was going to joke, and I was like, no, I can't do it.
Yeah, I just hope that Andre doesn't find some new strain of pit bull that's fucking incredible or something like that, man, because that would be the end.
But even recently, like, I saw an interview with Andre 3000. He was talking about how he doesn't want to release a solo album because he doesn't feel like he's good enough and there's just so much better out there. And I was like, man, not only is he the best, he's more self-deprecating than me. And now that makes me feel even worse. Fuck.
Yeah.
And he's a sick producer. Man.
Yeah. Fuck that guy, man.
Fuck that guy.
Talented prick. Black Thought, right? I got, like, obviously, Black Thought, the Roots album's amazing. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, it's so funny you put Black Thought up there, because for me, like, whenever I talk to people that really are into hip hop, they say Black Thought's incredible. But I still don't feel like people know, do you know what I mean? Like, how good he is. Like, whenever you watch, whenever he's doing a cypher, like, or he's like doing a freestyle thing on a radio show or anything like that, he's always the best. Like, always. He's fucking incredible. His voice, the lyrics, just amazing. And that track where he does him.
I knew you were going to say this. Boom, yeah?
Yeah. Where he does him, Cool G Rap, and Big Daddy Kane. And,
shit.
Oh my God.
That is just mimicry at its best. Like, he must have had to put like cotton wool balls in his mouth to do the fucking Cool G Rap voice, because he does the lisp, he does the flow, he does the lyrics. Like, everyone has to go and listen to this song. Boom.
But yeah, that's a great top three, man.
Yeah, that's it. Just not a top five. I couldn't get it.
Plug one, plug two, guest plugs for you.
So listen, obviously we want to plug the album This Is Where It Gets Good, which is great. Is there anything else you got coming up, or is it all about sort of pushing that album at the moment?
That album came out a couple of months ago. Just released a new video for a song from it called Hurts, so go watch that. Shot it in India in January when I was doing some shows out there.
I meant to ask about this. Sorry, we're way over time here. I will let you go. But India, what was doing shows in India like?
Oh, fucking amazing, man. Like, the audiences are so sick out there because, in a way, less judgmental than audiences in the UK. So I was doing sets at like 1 a.m. in a club, and I could play like 2 hours of my own music and grime and shit that they'd never heard before. And the clubs were just going nuts because it doesn't matter. They were just like, I just want to hear bass lines and I just want to hear shit that will make me move. There was just no judgment. You know, I couldn't play like a beat I'd made yesterday, even though it was banging and sounded like the same tempo as a Drake song, or, you know, banged with a big bass line or whatever. I couldn't do that here because people are like, I don't know this. I've never heard this before. I'm not dancing. They'll come up and request, like, you know, whatever. So like, it was quite freeing to do that. And also, just India is an incredible, beautiful and intense place. So, you know, just being able to travel around and link with like MCs in Mumbai and, like, you know, and promoters out there and lovers of hip hop and grime out there, you know, it's just an amazingly like eye-opening experience.
Okay, cool. Listen, man, thank you so much for being on the podcast, mate. You've been a great guest.
My pleasure.
We really appreciate it. If you haven't checked it out, make sure you check out This Is Where It Gets Good. Listen, man, thank you very much for coming on. I appreciate it.
No worries, man. Big up.
All right, take it easy.